Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And if you're watching us live, welcome. We're on, if you're watching us live, you know what we're on.
Ustream. If you're not, join us next week on Ustream.
Right. The Horrible Podcast. Like you can find us everywhere at The Horrible Podcast. We are on Twitter, at Horrible PCast.
We are
A-T, but the ampersand.
No. We are A-B ampersand. A-B ampersand Horrible Podcast.
I think my phone is plugged in, and it must have thought it heard Hey Siri. Because I just heard it go off. So, we're at Horrible PCast.
On Twitter.
HorrorBullPCast on Twitter. Mm-hmm. We don't have Instagram going, though.
No, we don't. Well, what do we... I mean, we have video. We don't need to take the step back to pictures of ourselves.
What pictures do we have?
I know. It would just all be Throwback Thursdays from when we used to, like... Gina used to take hundreds of pictures of us during the podcast.
Yes. She had them all printed out. Did she tell you that? She made a quilt.
Yeah, she did. She made a giant quilt of pictures
Quiltme.com.
What? Is that a thing?
Quiltmylife.com.
That's not a thing. That sounds like a website.
Is that a Rapture poster behind you now?
Can you tell?
I can see it, yeah.
Yeah, it's Rapture, and the other one's zombies.
Nice.
Moving up. Yeah, man.
I missed the hole, though.
Yeah, well, that's
Kate's
something.
Here to defend herself.
Shaking my head. You know she listens, too.
She's
going
to
love that joke. Yeah.
She'll laugh. Oh, is it a joke she listens because she doesn't listen?
She does listen. That's a joke.
Yeah, and you can find us also on Facebook at The Horrible Podcast, and we're also at thehorriblepodcast.com.
Yeah, just go find us on the internet. Rate and review the podcast on iTunes. That helps.
Yeah, podcast on iTunes,
for sure.
Stitcher.
For sure. What shirt are you wearing? It looks like a chocolate mints shirt.
It's
what are those called?
Kessel, it says Kessel Fun Run.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. I know the shirt, yeah.
Because Brian, you're allergic to exercise, so that's funny on two levels.
which, you know, it's funny, that shirt, because I was watching the movie that we're doing this week for this episode, Digging Up the Marrow. Adam Green's Digging Up the Marrow 2014 just came out on VOD. They have so many shirts they go through.
Yeah. That's,
I think we could have a pre-conversation just about the shirts in that movie. They're pretty ridiculous.
I
ordered a couple of them myself.
Yeah, me too.
A couple of them were good. Yes, I will agree with you there.
The Crystal Lake Camp Counselor one was probably my favorite.
I liked
we need Hatchet shirts or Frozen shirts.
Yeah.
I did like that they used the Metallica font for the Frozen shirt and Slayer. They used the Slayer font for Hatchet, right? I think. There was one t-shirt that Adam Green was wearing where it was Hatchet, but it was in the Slayer font.
Did Adam Green come from the Troma School of Horror?
Horror?
Not that I know of.
I don't know.
It doesn't mean he didn't.
Because I know Lloyd Kaufman was in this film. A lot of cameos in this film, actually. Yeah. But there was he did an earlier movie that I was like, oh, this must be a Troma film that he talked about. Oh, well.
I don't know that much about Adam Green beyond the fact that he did the Hatchet movies and Frozen. Which, Drew, did you and I watch that like one of those furious summers where I drank a lot and we watched a lot of horror movies? Do you remember us watching that together? No,
I don't think we watched Frozen together. I think we watched Dead Snow together.
We did, but I thought we watched Frozen too.
Isn't Frozen really?
I know I watched
too.
Frozen.
Do I?
Not that Frozen.
I know it's not the Disney Frozen.
No, I think I remember us watching it, like just sort of like one of those lazy summers where we just would watch horror movies all the time. Maybe not.
We might have. Yeah, I mean, we definitely might have. I know I watched it. I can't remember the circumstances around watching it, but I wouldn't be surprised if we actually did.
And I don't
watch it together. Yeah.
I don't remember if I've seen any of the Hatchet movies. I know that I haven't seen like two or three, but I can't remember if I've seen one. Like the cover and the trailer look really familiar, but it's a movie that I don't know if it's like the footage of the big head that we watched that the guy kind of looks like that. I don't know.
It's funny you mentioned the big head because a lot of this felt like the big head.
Yeah. Okay.
The Ray Wise's character and the stories that he told about the you know, what we'll get to learn are what, that monsters apparently do exist and that they are just the things that turned out strange when they came out and they were left to die, but they actually ran off and became, you know, had their own world, their own, let's just go ahead and say it, it's their own Midian.
Yeah. What is that?
Nightbreed.
Hmm? Nightbreed.
That's yeah. right.
That's what gotcha. I thought. I thought the Marrow was very Nightbreedish.
Well, and let's also give a obvious reference is that Ray Wise's character's name is Decker.
Yeah.
That's the name of, what's his name's name? Name in Nightbreed.
Is it? Is that, see, it's been so long since I've seen Nightbreed that I can't be a source of any sort of like, at all for that. So I don't know. Like I can't fathom all of that. Like,
yeah, it's Cronenberg is Dr. Philip K. Decker in Nightbreed.
Philip K. Decker, which is a mixture of Philip K. Dick and Decker from Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, also known as Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, that's I think that's definitely an obvious homage to Nightbreed. It's been so long. I need to rewatch that movie. Maybe that would be a good like classic episode. Like we could do an episode on a classic movie. So I mean maybe that we could do that.
I'd love to do Nightbreed.
So let's set this movie up. I mean, I tried to think of like a way to typify it because it's not really a found footage movie per se. Like it's not. You know,
I like when they tell them that it is though.
Yeah.
He's like, so is this footage? Like, is that Kane Hodder? He's like, so this is.
So what am I watching?
Is this found footage? No, it's footage that we. And he couldn't explain how it wasn't. No, it's footage we.
It is very meta and self referential as far as horror films go, and the whole idea of found footage. I was glad that they did at least touch on that subject, so it wasn't the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
Yeah, so I mean, the word I kept thinking of was pseudocumentary. Pseudo-doc. Yeah, I was trying to think of a way of making a portmanteau out of it. Yeah. Pseudoc.
I don't know if that works.
Docudo.
I mean, it's basically a pseudo-documentary that is also kind of a found footage movie, but it is... Because I knew nothing of the movie before I started watching it. I just, based on your recommendation that we were doing, I was like, I'm watching it. So first I thought it was just a documentary about, like, I'll go through the first few minutes in my mind. Like, I thought, oh, this is just a documentary about monsters. I was like, well,
this
is...
What the fuck is Brian Dunn?
I know. Well, I just thought, like, well, what are we going to talk about? Like, are we just going to talk about our favorite monsters? Like, what angle are we going to take for the podcast episode? And then Adam Green showed up and... I was like, oh, that's the Hatchet guy. And he went far beyond, like seeing him talk, he went far beyond just talking about monsters. And he was kind of hamming it up for the camera a little bit. So I thought like, oh, this may be more than that. And I'd forgotten that Ray Wise was in it. So like all these details started to appear for me as I figured out what was going on. And it's kind of neat because it's kind of a... comical, like it doesn't really take itself seriously documentary, pseudo documentary until like the last 30 seconds of it. Mm. But I kind of like the tone here. It seemed like there was weird music underneath the, like it wasn't silent when they were talking. So I kind of liked that it was like, oh, here's some jaunty music to go along with
this
documentary.
It was like just the generic festival documentary music, just that kind of upbeat. Real cheesy
and like
public domain.
Yes. Yeah,
and as far as like what the budget probably was for this, I think that was kind of the right way to go. I mean, they put the money where it needed to go, which was in the just sort of the practical effects that happened a little bit later. But mostly, I mean, Brian, but sort of before the podcast, I don't mean to sort of draw you out into the light with this, but you talked about like. Sort of Adam Green's acting being sort of the faulty thing here, but I kind of liked his sort of hammy, like giggly look at the camera, kind of like look at what we're doing stuff he was perpetrating here on the movie. Bri?
Yeah, I'm thinking about how I'm going to kill you for
why?
I'm joking. God, did you think you would have known me long since how long you've. Oh, fuck, never mind.
I mean, if I don't...
I've been even drinking tonight and I can't even speak correctly.
If I don't know you by now, I will never, never know you.
The no, I just I thought that I guess my big the biggest fault was I was really hoping for more of the monster stuff. Mm. I mean, we do get a good amount of it with Ray Wise's character explaining right. what his beliefs are for this monster. Or what monsters are. Right. I mean, and the detail they go into with what he has seen, too. And there were a couple of other things that kind of, like, bothered me about the way things went. It's like, wouldn't you have gone straight back to the place the next night without him?
Yeah.
I mean, why did you always have to have him with you?
I almost, like, if this were an Oscar-worthy or, like, an Oscar-contending movie, it would have been, like, the whole thing would have been that the monsters never did actually exist. And I kind of...
A beautiful monster?
Yeah.
A beautiful mindster.
A beautiful mindster. I like that. I'm trying to think of other movies that I could name it. But, I mean, yeah, it's... I do think that a reveal of a monster was kind of necessary for this movie early on. But, I mean, if it were... I kind of like, though, that it kind of toys with you and toys with them and what their perception of... Like, what is actually going on is, because it's not just the plot of, oh, they see it, now they're trying to convince everybody else. Even though, like, I like how playful it is with that, where it's like, they do see it, and then no one else really believes them, because, they've obviously pulled these kinds of tricks in the past, it seems
well,
like.
They, right. And they make, they make monster films,
yeah.
So would they not try to pull this gag on people, right?
Yeah, like I love how sort of like wink and nod cynical it is. Like, oh, look how kind of cynical we are with this movie. I kind of like that. That's maybe I laughed. I mean, I laughed kind of a lot at this movie. And Brian, I was telling you again, I hate to do such inside baseball, but I was talking about how Adam Green's acting sort of reminds me of AJ Bowen a little bit in the Sacrament. As Shane,
yeah.
As kind of the Shane Smith character from Vice, so I kind of dug his acting, but let's run down a little bit more of the plot. I forgot how they got hooked up with Ray Wise. Like, what was the connection, Brian or Drew?
It was just one of the people who'd sent stuff to Adam Green over the years. Adam Green had all that stuff he was showing off that he'd gotten sent, and one of the things was this letter he'd received from Decker saying that he had this great discovery to show him, and so they decided for some reason to actually take him up on his offer.
Yeah, and I do remember that, because he's like, oh, the way to really get in touch with me is to write a handwritten letter, which is what this older guy very obviously did.
I wrote that down as a note. I was like, oh, handwritten letters.
yeah, so, I mean...
It's stained. It'd be coffee stained handwritten letters.
Exactly. I mean, Ray Wise, I think, was a pretty phenomenal choice for this guy. Like, he had
he was a wise choice.
Well, see, as much as I like him, and I thought he did a great job, I think he's the thing that makes the whole thing weak, though, in that it tells the whole, it gives you the whole idea. If you ever wanted to pull some sort of, is this real or is it not stunt, it's done as soon as they show Decker and it's Ray Wise. It's like, oh, okay, so this is just a movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other level to it that you can ever achieve at that point.
Yeah, I definitely concede that. Like, I've totally. You're definitely right on that point. That, I mean, at the end of the day, it's Ray Wise, and so the devil from Reaper is in this movie. I mean, yeah.
Laura Palmer's dad.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
and spoiler alert, her murderer.
Well, technically it's Bob.
Yeah, but literally it's her father.
Guys, it's only been 25 years and you're still.
Oh, is it fucking been 25 years?
1990 to 2015, yeah. Dude.
Damn it.
Yeah, it's been a quarter of a century.
Well, we're going to get that Showtime reboot.
Yeah.
Continuation or whatever.
Yeah, Ray Wise is haunted many of my nightmares in high school when I watched. I was in high school when Twin Peaks came out.
In RoboCop.
I was eight. Yeah, he was in RoboCop.
No, that's right. He was in RoboCop. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Yeah, man. I think he's. I definitely concede that the dude, he kills the sort of meta aspect of this.
But I mean, that's the thing. I liked him. So it was a trade you had to make there. You either get Ray Wise to be really awesome and Ray Wise, or you have a chance to actually pull like the Sandman kind of wool over your eyes with that documentary, which is what I thought. This is very similar to early on. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as you see rewatch, you're like, all right, well, all right. So it's obviously not real.
Or like Catfish. You know what I mean? Like you could catfish them by, I mean, it could still be Ray Wise, but you sort of make it harder to get in touch with him for a while. I don't know. Like, I mean, it just seems like weird. Yeah, you're right. It is kind of weird that Ray Wise is there, but it's also the awesome thing. Like, I really dug that he was in this movie because he kind of played it up, and I think he did kind of a subtle job with the acting, except when he went like way over the top, where he's like, don't you touch that.
Yeah.
So subtle.
Also, in that scene when he did the don't you touch that, what kind of asshole comes into your home and then starts touching things like a padlocked door in your house? And
Adam Green, like, that's the asshole he played. That's what I liked. He like played himself like he was on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Where you're like, is this, you know, he's playing himself as an asshole, like Schwimmer got to do. And
I guess that's how I saw it.
Yeah. It gave, because he got to play, Will Barrett got to play the nice straight man, and Adam Green got to play I'm Adam Green, you know?
We're going to go through all sorts of links to get the story.
Yeah. I think
also does playing Freddy playing Jason qualify you to be a expert on horror films?
I mean, Kane Hodder's kind of got that position, especially though in the Adam Green world though, because he's big in Hatchet and everything like that.
Oh, is he Hatchet?
He's not Hatchet, but he's in Hatchet.
Yeah,
I
mean,
I think he's Hatchet.
I would say, I think it qualifies him. I mean,
I'm honestly asking. I'm being sarcastic. That wasn't honestly asking.
Brian, explain it. Could you?
No, he is Victor Crowley. Okay, yeah, he was Victor Crowley. I thought he had an actual
Victor
role.
Crowley.
I guess he was his dad as well. That was the other role.
Okay. His name was literally Mr. Crowley.
Yeah,
Alistair Crowley.
I really enjoyed the third Hatchet. Actually, just going back to that for a second,
I haven't seen
Adam Green did not direct. So.
Hatchet 3. May I ask you a question?
No, that's the fourth one. I don't know, man. And then the prequel came out the year after that, Early Access. Hatchet Early Access.
I got it. I got it.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I mean, I like the setup here, though. Like, there are very few movies these days that do monsters very well. And, like, this is a pretty good setup for a monster movie. And it's not so heavy-handed like most horror movies is, where it's like, oh, we have to go to this place to find this giant monster. It's like, it's just believable enough because it's cynical people doing it. And it kind of reminds me of Grave Encounters, where it's this cynical group of people going into the situation where they're like, I don't know. Because they come into the situation not believing that there are actual monsters. And I kind of like that because they're like the cynical movie types or whatever. I mean, that's kind of stereotypical, but that's what they are. And I mean, the first half of Grave Encounters is a really fine found footage movie, I think. And so this kind of mirrors that. And it's also, it kind of reminds me of The Taking of Deborah Logan. Is that what it's called? The Deborah Logan movie.
I think it's Taken.
I think, yeah, it kind of goes in that direction. And I think tonally it works. It's a little over the top, but as soon as you establish Adam Green as like the guy who is a director, you're not expected to believe that he's, you know, I mean, he is kind of over the top about it. And he's excited. I kind of like the way that he plays that character, the character of Adam Green versus the person Adam Green, sort of this. And that might just be him playing himself as, but just in this movie where he's really cynical. I don't know. Okay. All right. Drew, what were you going to say?
I kind of wish you bringing up Grave Encounters. The one thing I would say, though, Grave Encounters was scary, and I don't think this ever achieves that. There's like one moment as we get somewhere towards the end that even has some remote terror built into it. Like I enjoyed the idea. I like the setup of it. I really enjoyed the tone. I laughed out loud several times while watching it and with what was going on. It was a very entertaining movie, but I was like, I was never, there's never any terror, I thought, at all.
Right.
And I enjoyed the creature effects and the monsters and all. I was like, I wish they'd established some sort of atmosphere at some point that could have been a little more frightening, even.
Yeah.
That one scene, really.
I agree with that.
It really is the, I know you just said, or Tyler's mentioned that he hasn't seen Nightbreed in a while, but it's like it's the found footage version of Nightbreed, where they have stumbled upon Midian, which is, you know, Midian's in a graveyard as well.
Right.
Underground, just like the Marrow. That it's like they've made the found footage version of that with digging up the Marrow, which is fine. I like the idea that there's a whole race of creatures that live underground, and that's where monsters come from. The artwork and the monsters were designed by Alex Pardee, and really like some fantastical monsters too. Like they weren't just
vampire or generic. You could almost say that this was a monster Pardee. No, I like that they were sort of out of the box, and like, you know, they weren't just like, oh, look how gruesome this is, but they had some,
like they were almost like a comical version of like the first light hits the big head monster. Yeah. It's, you know, does the E.T. kind of scream.
I loved it. I thought that was hilarious, but also I jumped. Like, I didn't quite expect it because I thought at this point they were going to drag out, oh, this is bullshit, for a little while longer. So I kind of liked that moment. And it wasn't scary, but it scared me.
Well, the creatures were scary. That was the thing. So the creatures were terrifying. The one I was thinking of is at the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. And
the jack-o'-lantern?
No. The one,
the
that
clown.
No, he had the weird thing on his face, on his head, and then he turns. It looks on like the top of his head, and then
it was almost like a trash bag.
I thought it was a clown.
Something like that. I couldn't quite tell what it was, but it looked like the way I remember it is something else is on the top of his head, and then and it's like, what is that? And then he looks up, and it was some sort of just a creepy ishness there.
Yeah.
You're right. They weren't like, you know, oh, let's be buddies with these monsters. They are just misunderstood creatures. They are literally monsters.
I kind of want to circle back around to that, but I do like that. It's almost like a John Landis, Don Coscarelli movie here that we've got.
Don Coscarelli's in it.
Yeah, he totally is. I mean, and I think that they did a great job of, they clue you into what kind of movie this is by, I mean, you know, they have the Troma guys in there, and they have Don Coscarelli, and like these filmmakers that don't necessarily take themselves seriously as like, oh my God, this is scary horror stuff.
Odorous Urungus.
Yeah, well, it's all campy, and I like that. Like, they're telling you on a very fundamental level, even like subtextually, like, this is what this is. This, do not take this seriously.
But you know that, Kevin, I mean, if you watched any of, I won't say any, but if you watch most of Adam Green stuff, I mean, the Hatchet movies, that's one thing they are not, is serious, like slasher horror. It's of the super gross out variety more than anything.
Which, I mean, that fits. Like, I kind of want to go back and watch the Hatchet movies after this now. Like, I like those guys.
Yeah, good luck. They have some painful ones. I think it was two. I can't remember if it was one or two. That one of them I really disliked. Like, watching, I was like, this is just bad. And I can't remember if it's one or two. And then I remember watching three and being like, wow, three is, I'm liking this a lot more.
So it sounds like you're administering a challenge. The Hatchet movies, do it, and I think I'm going to accept.
I mean, I think it's worthwhile.
Was the first Hatchet movie part of one of those? Like, I remember it came out around the time of all of the Masters of Horror, like the serialized stuff. I know it wasn't Masters of Horror, but do you remember like that series of movies that came out? Like, it was a set of movies that were under a singular banner. They were being released as like Midnight Shockers or something. Like,
Chillerama
films to In the Dark or something.
It was something like that. I thought it was like,
oh right, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, it was like, yeah, produced, I know what you're talking about.
They all had the same.
I don't think it was though.
Okay, but I remember do you remember what I'm talking about though? Like, there were these 10 or 12 movies that were released in the same like summer, and they had the same labeling up top that it was something. And I've in the years since, I've forgotten. I thought it was part of that, but maybe it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I mean, it might have been, but I don't think it was yet. I was trying to look up one of them to see if it would remind me. There's a movie, the movie Penny Dreadful was one of the ones I'm thinking of that was in that series, but I can't think of what it was called.
Though. Right. But yeah, I mean, I kind of want to go back and watch them, but I miss them. And I mean, it's very personality driven. I mean, this is very, I mean, I would see another movie kind of like this.
Okay. After Dark Horror Fest, Films to Die For.
Yes. It. Was it part of that?
No, I don't think so. I just finally found that was. I don't think it was, that I recall still. But that was what that series that you were talking about were from.
Okay. I just remember a lot of those coming out going like, oh, these are... And you know what's weird is when those came out, I thought, oh, these are kind of subpar movies that I might see if I run out of stuff to see. But right. It seems like they sort of like predated and ushered in this era of like VOD horror, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. So we kind of meandered away from the movie itself, but one thing I want to circle back to.
We've never done that before.
I know, like we never get off topic. So one thing I want to circle back to is this idea of deformity as equaling like monsterdom. This is kind of sort of not okay politically, blah, 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 these days. So like,
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
So Brian, would you, I mean, I don't know why you're the expert on dead things, but do you, I guess I can pose both of you, were the pictures of the deformed children, were those, do you think those were all real?
Yeah, they were.
I think so, yeah.
Those are things you can
so
find.
So unfortunate.
Those are things you can find online. In fact, like, it reminded me of when he's going through those pictures and he's talking about these children that are born deformed. There was an HBO documentary called, I think it was called, like, My Chernobyl Heart or something to that effect.
Yep.
About children that were born around Chernobyl and the defects they had. And I mean, this is what would happen. Like, they were, like, children were born with, you know, their brains outside of their skull cap, and it was just, you know, a fleshy brain thing on the back, or they didn't have legs that worked. They're all kind of, twisted and deformed. So that part was very believable. I could think, like, oh, okay, this is what happened to, which would be horrible, which would make it even better because it would be horrible.
Yeah, like, I'm torn as to whether I think is it a cheap way to get you to buy into this film, or is it a really effective way to get you to buy into this film? I mean, go ahead, Drew.
I was just kidding. I think it works until the end. I think it works as an idea of this is where our ideas of monsters come from, that, you know, and they've all gone to live together. But then when they become actual monsters, that's where it became weird. It's like the idea of, you know, these deformed children also being that way. But that's just where it got weird, I guess. As I thought the same thing. Is this offensive at that point to say that they're monsters? Like, to say that they're what we get our idea of monsters from, is that goes back to the Elephant Man sort of idea there. But to actually then make them monsters at the end was what got weird.
Well, he does make that Decker does make the speech where he talks about how there are those that have been deformed and they've had to become monsters because society has shunned them, and then there are those that are just plain evil.
Yeah.
I think, you know, those are the ones he's trying to look out for.
I think it's a weird and fine distinction, because I think it's interesting if you say, like, oh, these people who have been shunned from society have created their own society, which, like, that's a valid claim. But then when you get to the end and it's like a Halloween trash bag that is also a human being.
Right.
Like, that's where it becomes like, oh, that's, I don't know.
Or
like,
that was just a monster, a strange monster, which was a cool idea, but it destroys that whole idea of what you'd established of these are just people.
Yeah. The character, he's telling the story about Brella, the umbrella woman.
Right.
And then he has the one character, like, his name is Vance. Why do you call him Vance?
I like
that. Because that's what I wanted to name him.
Yeah. That's like when he said little Bigfoot. Little Bigfoot.
How about Derringer?
Yeah, he keeps going back to Derringer. Let's call him Derringer. No. Do you want to name him? No. Then he's little Bigfoot.
Yeah. And see, that's a great sequence. I really enjoyed that a lot as well. That's the thing. It becomes a lot of tell, don't show.
Yeah,
it might be one of its weaknesses. Is it might be a little too much of that
for a purpose. Like, the purpose is to obscure the truth from you, or to like make you question the truth. But I mean I bought in the moment I saw the first monster. So a lot of that was hemming and hawing at nothing.
Yeah, no, it never. Even when they were first questioning whether he was telling the truth or not, just the setup of the movie itself, I already knew that he was not. Like, that's the thing. That was never something that seriously even crossed my mind. This is not the movie that's gonna pull the rug out from under you and be like, he's just crazy. Like, there are gonna be there be monsters here.
Yeah. There be tigers. Yeah, I agree. And I don't know, like, I don't think it's necessarily offensive, but it's also like, if it's okay that the monsters are really deformed in the end, but to say that they're the same people who are these actual clinical photographs, that's where the weird part is. But it also creates the most buy-in, too. I don't know. that's, I don't know. Like, that's just, I don't know.
Well, and it's very obvious too. I mean, as soon as they showed the, yeah, I am on Siri.
Hey Siri, Siri
does think I keep talking to her.
Wow.
As soon as they showed the padlock door, I was like, well, obviously he's got one of these monsters in his house.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they ungracefully drop a couple of, you know, a couple of lines in there that we never do get the full intimation of, but we know exactly what they meant. It's a rather ungraceful mystery that there is in there.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It is sort of clumsy in that regard, that there really is no mystery. The real mystery, even the mystery of Decker himself is rather like, I don't care. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's not the person he pretends to be. Like, who gives a shit?
Right. He's crazy, but right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he lied about being a police officer. Also,
I liked his lie though. Yeah, he said, "I said private detective." No, you didn't.
I do think that's a good characterization. I was like, Brian, go ahead.
Who flies to Boston just to get a quote?
One interview. Okay, I want to talk about that too. But I think it's actually really good characterization that they didn't, that Ray Wise's character is not just. Like, they could have just made him right. They could have just made him correct, but everyone thinks he's crazy. But instead, they did make him a little bit crazy in a very specific kind of way. Like, he's crazy in that he tells these sort of half-truths on, you know, to just, like, so that he can't, I don't know, that he can't be nailed down or whatever. Like, I do like that about him, that he's not just right. He's also a little bit out of his mind. But yeah, I was kind of flabbergasted that they're like, well, we're going to Boston, because they made a big deal about it. He's like, I was in Boston 3 weeks ago. I don't need to go back. And he's like, no, we're going to Boston. We're going to get to the bottom of this. And it was one scene with one dude who said he didn't know this guy. And then they're I guess we're going back to L.A. Yeah, but I mean,
could have done that over the phone.
Right. Granted, the Boston.
Oh, but you wouldn't tell him over the phone.
Right. But it didn't accomplish anything narratively by having him go there.
It was just a 5 minute. Because I expected.
All right, we did this.
Yeah, and I expected when they did that, because they showed that scene and then it shows them walking, I expected them to be like, all right, so what we're going to do is find another cop to tell us something. But instead, it's like, well, when we get back to Los Angeles, I'm like, what?
We'll
that makes no sense.
Because I thought we'd get like the cop who, as they were leaving, would be like, would sit there and say, hey, wait a second. You want to know about, you know, William Decker? I know about Decker.
Yeah.
Like I knew his former partner. I was his former partner or something like that, you know?
He lost his mind when his wife and child died.
When his wife died giving birth to his monster child.
Right, his big-headed child.
Yeah, it was so weird because, I mean, granted, I mean, the Boston Police Department is way bigger than, like, local yokels.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that one guy doesn't know a guy, I mean, doesn't really hold water. Like,
hey, that guy's in charge of all personnel.
Yeah. He knows
ever.
He knows everyone by name, rank, and picture.
It's like he just walked up to whoever the desk clerk was at that point and said, hey, do you know this guy? No. He was never a cop here.
It definitely belies this sort of idea of trauma filmmaking. I mean, one of the things that Lloyd Kaufman talks about in Make Your Own Damn Movie is like, use whatever you have at your disposal to make your picture look more like it has a higher budget than it does. So I can imagine, like, if Lloyd Kaufman were making a movie and they're like, hey, we can shoot in Boston, and he could do it for free or for cheap, he'd be like, hell yeah, we'll find a way to put a scene in Boston in there.
Right.
And then I imagine him not actually going to Boston, but mailing a camera.
I know, for free. Like, he would find a way to mail a camera for free to Boston to have someone shoot it for free. And I love
give him a second unit credit.
Yeah, and the weird thing is, though, like, the only footage we really get is them on a plane for like 2 seconds.
Boston.
And then,
you know, the shot of Boston.
That cop was in the most cop uniform I've ever seen.
I didn't pay attention to that.
I mean, it wasn't most. It just looked very much like a cop uniform, you would get to dress like a cop.
Hey,
you
know,
he was he had the most blindingly, I couldn't see it because I was blinded by his accent from Boston.
Let me ask you this, Tyler, while we're live streaming and Drew's cameras and all, does that mean everyone just sees Gina's face?
No. I just put up our logo.
Okay.
The first time, yeah. There's just at about like 15 minutes in, there's just a random shot of a girl's face. So since then, I've been alternating between the logo and the film's the wall version of digging up the marrow.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So not Drew's wife's face. But if you watch the live stream, there is just a random picture of his wife's face about 15 minutes in.
Nice.
So I'm glad you brought that up and sort of broke the fourth wall on that. Because otherwise it's like inexplicable. Like we put it in there, like splicing porn into Disney films.
It dawned on me as it was, you know, because the Skype will switch who's talking as voices picked up. And it was like, oh God, did someone just, this Gina's just plastered all over the place.
No, it's just our logo.
Just start showing up in stock commercial, stock photos in magazine and print ads.
It's just our logo. So this is more or less just like a radio show with our logo over the top of it.
But what's a podcast again?
I know. I told you,
Grandma.
We were talking about Boston, but I think it's weird that they talked about Boston while he's wearing a Boston Strong shirt. Like, I wonder if that just accidentally happened or they did that on purpose.
Oh, that is how they. That is how the editor got him to think to go to Boston.
Oh, really?
He points at his shirt.
Yeah.
He's sitting there saying, "How else can we find it? If we could just find someone who knew this guy." Before and then the editor.
Oh, see, it was very obvious that shirt was planted.
Yeah, I missed that.
The only reason I think
obviously they're from there. I would guess it seems.
The only reason I think that shirt was planted is because it was so out of place from all his other shirts.
Yeah, it was. It totally was. Like it was way out of place because everything else was a horror movie shirt. Also, Brian,
he's from Holliston, Massachusetts. They're all Bostonians essentially, or Massachusettsians.
Holliston, Mass.
Mass.
I want to see that. Speaking of which, I want to watch that show now.
Yeah, I do too.
This is a better commercial for their Holliston TV show than anything. Because when it was done, I was like, I want to watch that.
Is it on?
I don't know. That's a good question.
A Netflix or an Amazon kind of deal?
I don't know. That seems like a Brian question to be answered.
Yeah, that's your forte, Brian, is finding things online.
Mm.
I would say that.
I'm glad you guys cleared that up because I didn't know where you were going with that. I was like, what the fuck does that
Brian? Don't say you guys. He
Brian,
cleared that up.
Brian, you are the guy who tells us where to find everything on VOD. That's what I'm saying.
Oh.
There was some other point I was going to make about the Boston thing, but completely, utterly forgot. So I thought I'd just put that out there while we're talking about things. But I kind of want to get back to talking about the latter half of the movie. Like once they get back, there are some very obvious plants in the movie, like where the second camera disappears and then we get that as like the last shot. I saw that coming from like a mile away because they're like, oh, we have one. That was a very Blair Witch Project moment. Like it was a very obvious like. Well, what's going to happen with this camera that has utterly disappeared? Hello? Can you hear me, Brian?
Yeah, you just came. You clicked off for a second.
Sorry. Audio problems. Technology.
Hey, we're talking to each other across, you know, half of the country, so.
I know.
Across oceans.
Of time.
Yeah, across oceans of time to find each other.
We should let listeners know that this podcast is the Lake House, so. Everything that happens, like when I talk, it's 2 years later for Brian and Drew.
Whoa.
Technically, it's like the episode of the Weeping Angel episode from Doctor Who.
Exactly.
Whoa.
My only Doctor Who reference, guys.
Speaking of...
Yeah, it's the one you keep bringing up. Hey, Holliston FearNet, and it's also available on Hulu, iTunes, and FearNet On Demand.
Okay, cool. We'll have to check that out.
How about that?
That might be something we could do as a side project.
I'm glad you looked that up, Drew, because I just went to Amazon.com and looked up Amazon.
I went to Wikipanion or Wikipedia on my phone.
I've done that before where I go to Amazon and then also type in Amazon for Amazon. And
or it pulls up go Amazon. To Google and type in Google.
It's like exhibit. Yo, I heard you liked Amazon and you're Amazon, so I just put this Amazon in there.
I'm trying to find the Amazon place.
So, I mean, there's a lot. What's weird about this movie is that I really like the progression of it. I think it's... Like in retrospect, some of it's kind of humdrum. Like here are just these steps that are being taken. But I like the world that they build here because I kind of like looking, I mean, I've always liked Troma, so I kind of like looking into the world of independent filmmaking. So seeing like what I'm a gear person, so like watching what they're editing on and looking at their mixer and how everything is set up, it's all kind of interesting to me. So I liked all of this behind the scenes stuff that they were doing.
Yeah, no, it is a cool little view into that world, and how, like, I guess how everyone knows each other too. Like all the you made the comment about Mick Garris's acting.
Whoa. Like there was one line that seemed ad-libbed that was like way harsh, and even Mick Garris was like, "Whoa, I'm kidding." Like he said something that was, he's like, "What are you, stupid?" Or something in there.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no, he said that exactly. He's like, "What are you, stupid?" And he's like, "No, I mean, I'm just kidding. Just,
I know.
But I mean, seriously, are you stupid?"
Yeah,
like he did it both two ways.
Well, it's very obviously they must have come in like, "Hey, we're doing this movie. Can you just ad lib? Can you just like huck it up for a second for us?" And this is going to be kind of catty to say, but like, I think it's kind of funny that Adam Green like infers from this guy, Decker, having talked to Mick Garris, that he's talked to every director in Hollywood.
Ooh, zing it, girl.
Was that, I mean, because he's like, oh, he's been talking to all these big time Hollywood directors. I wonder if that was
who did they mention? They mentioned Carpenter was like the biggest name.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. They did mention Carpenter.
They mentioned Holland and Garris and Carpenter.
Yeah.
Roski.
You know, the three biggest horror directors, Mick Garris, Tom Holland, and John Carpenter, which is true.
There's somebody else they mentioned. I can't remember who else.
Also, too, flashlight technology has come a long way, guys. These flashlights they use in that cemetery
are
a nightmare.
They just look like someone's open mouth, like a lit open mouth.
Right. It's like, wow, they can't. There's not even any light in the middle.
It was like, get new batteries at least.
When X-Files first came on, I just remember going, Jesus Christ, where do they get those flashlights? Those are like the best flashlights ever.
And those are FBI flashlights.
Yeah, we've gone backwards in flashlight technology now.
These are indie cinema flashlights.
Right, exactly.
And indie cinema flashlights have to be low light so that you can't see the monsters.
I didn't quite understand the stated aversion to night vision in that situation.
Yeah, he kept saying it wouldn't look that good and it'd have a
looks better than not lighting at all.
He said it would have something. It would look like something specific, and I can't remember what he said, but it was
sex
like
sex tape. He said it looks like a green blob, and he says it looks like a sex tape, and he's like, oh, don't use it then. It's like,
I think
that's a poor decision. I would have liked to have
also
at least seen something.
The setup of oh, I installed this thing. It looks like a street light. They'll never notice it. You just hung up a new light.
Yeah, you hung a lamp on a tree.
I did like it. He's like, yeah, I tried that before. It didn't work.
He's tried it. I love that he's tried everything. And I'm thinking that a prequel to this is all of the things that Ray Wise has done to draw these people out.
Travels with Decker.
Travels with Decker. By John Steinbeck.
Because he's been several. I mean, the question is, how many different places has he found? And the other question is, how has he run them off so many times?
Yeah.
Without being attacked this way.
Do you think he started in Boston and ended up following them across, like nomad-like across the nation to Los Angeles?
Yeah, that sounds good.
That's what I assumed had happened.
Me too.
And also, so is his son in the... Okay, so we know he at one point had his wife and his son is revealed to have actually at the end his son is probably a monster.
Yes.
No, that's it safe is. Bet.
It is.
Yes.
We see the spoons too, which would also allude to the scene where they're looking at the camera and see him with a spoon over the grave.
But that also doesn't make sense.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say. Is it what was
I don't
his son?
Think he had his son. I don't think that's who was in his room.
It's
you
like
think
an
he
adoptive
just had a,
I think he captured one and that's who he used to find the marrow each time so he could find his son.
You think? Okay.
That's my guess.
Yeah,
that's
that makes sense. Unless the kid escaped and he was trying to get him back and that's why he elicited the help of...
But the room was still... But he'd already gotten trying to get their attention earlier and he still had that room locked earlier.
Yeah.
Well, but I don't know if
but he also
didn't there.
Wouldn't want them to go into this room that smells like human feces.
Oh, yeah. Which you would have smelled
and also,
already.
You would have been able to smell that outside
exactly.
of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like... Also, it would have made noise, right? Like, it wouldn't have just been... Okay.
You would think so.
Well, yeah. I think it... I don't know. It just is a weird callback to have spoons where he's feeding... Like, earlier in the movie, we see him feeding down into the marrow. And then later, mm-hmm. we see all the spoons on the floor. That just seems like a weird connection to make because it makes you think, like,
and
did
also,
it get
hey,
away?
What about reuse a spoon, bro? I mean,
right.
Save the earth.
Exactly. Just use... Maybe they're allergic to... Maybe they're allergic to regular spoons.
Well, those spoons weren't broken. You can use plastic spoons over and over again.
Says
yeah.
who?
I don't know. I mean, it's a good point. I mean, I thought it was his son in the room at first. The idea I just had was one I just came up with here. But it makes more sense because, like, once the fact that he had one captured, and if it's his son, doesn't make as much sense to why he's chasing them. Because I feel like he's only chasing them because that's where his son is. Because he says, I don't want to lose him again.
Right.
Right.
And so
he's using one of these creatures as like a tuning fork to find out where the marrow is going to pop
yeah,
up.
That's well, not
like I said, that's what I just posited. I didn't initially think that myself. I just
tuning
that
spoon.
I liked it.
But what? Okay, so now I don't understand why he tried to get Adam Green and other dude involved.
Like what? What's his purpose
yeah.
of getting them?
Well, he's been
involved?
Trying to get people involved forever. I don't know why. Yeah.
Like why now?
Because he doesn't seem to want people to know, but he does seem to want people to know. I don't know.
Like he's like the CIA. He only wants them to. Everyone's on a need to know basis. He wants you to just believe that monsters exist, but not film them. Which is weird.
That's an interesting question. I don't have a good answer for that either. I don't know why he's doing this the way he's doing it. I did not consider that he was doing it, that he had contacted them to find help him find his son. I felt like he already knew those things. He didn't need them to help him do that.
Like, he doesn't have an advocacy going on here. He's not like, I want you to find them because I want the world to know that they're people too.
Or he wants his son back.
Yeah.
But then again, why wouldn't he just go? Because
why wouldn't just say
they
it?
Didn't help? They weren't helping him get him back in any way, shape, or form.
And he didn't tell them.
At one point, he's begging them. Like, it looks like in that footage, it looks like he's begging them, whatever's in the grave in the marrow, to come and you know or forgive him. That's what I took from it. Like he was asking
weeping.
For forgiveness or something.
Did he just not find the last camera, or did he just not? Did he not when he turned
they
off the other
it.
Camera?
I thought they took it.
No, but I'm saying like the one that filmed because conveniently.
Oh, when Ray Wise is being filmed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Conveniently, he turns all of them but one off.
Oh, right. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I guess like I enjoyed the movie. I'm not trying to point. I think just like this is not a movie that you sit down and like pick apart.
Totally. No, this is
what we do. So.
I know. Like we have unspooled some, and I'm sure they have reasons for all of this. It's just they're not readily apparent, like for us in our sort of like navel gazing we're doing.
But I think ultimately that's where a lot of filmmakers fall down though, is with this idea that, oh, I made this abundantly clear. Yeah. Nah, you didn't. You know, and that's where a lot of movies that are bad movies, the filmmakers actually had a reason for what they did, but just no one else gets it. So,
and I think I can understand to a degree because this movie is certainly character driven and not plot driven. Like it's based on the character reactions, and Ray Wise's actions don't make sense plot wise, but they make sense. Like he's kind of nutty, so he doesn't want them to know too much. And like while I was watching the movie, that was enough for me. And usually with a single watch, that's enough. Like if I can understand why the characters react, that's why horror movies fail so often is that Most decisions are plot decisions, not character decisions. And like for me, that's why this movie works, is because like the characters are reacting in a way that I see as realistic. Whereas in most horror movies, people are like, oh, fuck, don't go in there, because like they have to go in there because how else are we going to see the monster if they don't go into the if they don't go down the hallway to investigate that sound? We don't get to see the monster.
Yeah, I agree. I never questioned really what they did, except for the end when he's trying to convince Will to go and he says, I'm not going to go in there, and then he's like, well, we're not even going to go there. It's like, you know, that's where he's going.
Yeah,
like he's going to the graveyard.
I also liked his comment too, like at that one point at the graveyard where he's like, man, what smells so bad? Well, we're in a graveyard, man, because like everyone knows that when you go to a graveyard it just smells like rotting bodies.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, all the times I've been to graveyards it just smells like dead flesh.
Well, I assume though that was because there was a giant hole dug there, and then who knows what was in that. That was my only
the marrow.
That was the pass. The pass I gave them on that one, but I did not think it was because of the graveyard. I thought it was because, oh yeah, the marrow probably smells.
But they gave the like they give this really. I mean, we're nitpicking, but like yeah, they're just like, oh, it's a graveyard. Derp.
No, we are nitpicking. It's like we are those people at a party that would explain a joke to you if you didn't get it.
Yeah. So what I meant by that.
No, but the I was interested. I wondered. I have this at the end here as my question. Is it? I think this would have worked as a straight horror film and not a documentary.
Like, well, I mean, think that's essentially what it is. By the time Ray Wise shows up,
sure,
it stops
sure.
being a documentary.
But if they'd have made this as you know, two guys at a horror festival that get pulled in by this guy who's. Two guys, one horror festival. No, I'm just thinking. I would have liked
someone other than Adam Green is what you're trying.
No,
to
No, no.
You're
I mean,
trying
I
to figure out a way
liked,
to get him out of here.
I would have liked. Well, I didn't hate Adam Green. I just thought he was over the top. Which maybe that's what he was supposed to be.
I liked it.
I mean, Hatchet. None of the Hatchets are under the top.
He doesn't rein it in. I really just wanted more monsters.
See, I agree with you there. I think that's still its ultimate downfall to me is like it didn't have enough of what I think it was kind of. I felt like I expected to get.
It is a great idea that the downtrodden and the tossed away of society are what become the monsters of our nightmares, and that idea that they are like this traveling circus that lives underground that just moves around from place to place.
You mean the movie Little Monsters is basically what this is?
Yes, exactly.
and Nightbreed. So Little Monsters and Nightbreed are the two things that Brian likes the most.
I'm putting up here is like Little Monsters meets Nightbreed in Adam Green's Digging the Marrow.
I mean, I get what you're saying. I mean, and there's so much depth to this idea too. And then granted, it's a small movie, so they didn't have the ability to do that. But the idea of even I would love to see, and this is kind of us get to go to that city and get to meet some of those creatures. And the idea that some of them are monsters. They are horrible, just like some people are. Mm-hmm. But they're not all that way. Like some of them are very nice and kind of, they just think it'd be an interesting world to see there. And that's what you get a little bit more of in Nightbreed, at least.
Also referencing Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, essentially.
Some of them
just caught.
They don't want to. It's just they're 9 to 5.
Exactly. This is, hey, we're just digging up the marrow all the time.
I would like Billy Crystal to be in it.
I know. And who was in Little Monsters? Who played the blue monster?
Howie Mandel.
Howie Mandel. Yeah. I want a little Fred Howie Savage. Mandel.
I think we could have come full circle and had Fred Savage play a monster in this.
That would have been awesome. No, and Fred Howie Savage Mandel, is the actually. Pumpkin monster.
Yes.
Vance.
No, his name was Jack.
I thought Vance was the pumpkin one.
I thought Vance was just some spidery guy that he saw. He had a picture of him. He's like, I call this one Vance.
Yeah, but isn't that the spidery guy at the end? He has the pumpkin, and when he pulls it off, he's got like the spider.
Yeah, I thought that too, Drew. Yeah, I agree with you. I thought that as well.
So at some point, he has made these creatures angry too.
Who?
Ray Wise.
No, that's the thing, because he said it's never happened. I think it was just them.
Them meddling. This is the thing that Drew always talks about. Like, well, why did we focus in on this? Like, why is this the scope of the movie? But that seems to be what happened.
We finally have it, though.
Yeah.
It's like,
meddling kids?
These meddling kids, like the Scooby-Doo. I mean,
like
they
found him before. They found out that he was checking out on them before, and so they've hidden. And this time, not only that, but those two guys are so egregious in their discovery. Also, I think they're angry with him because he has opened their world up to these people who are filming it and who are trying to take it out to a bigger place. I think that's why they end up capturing him here and have him do the most unconvincing negation of what he said.
I just don't think it was that egregious.
What is banging on the wall then? Who's filming this with this weird heavy breathing?
I just don't think it was that egregious. Like, I think it's
I
weird.
Didn't either,
that,
but
they did. They were very sensitive to
they're
PR.
Very angry,
they're very sensitive to PR. They're like the Westboro Baptist Church. They don't want any outsiders in there.
You know what I didn't like? Egregious Philbin.
I much prefer Michael Strahan to Egregious Philbin to host that show.
What? Yes.
I was just adding to your joke. Do you not like me playing on your joke?
It took me a second to realize who Michael Strahan was.
No, he's the guy who's on the show now instead of Regis Philbin.
It took a second. I only get to watch Kelly and Michael twice a year. When I go to the dentist,
I love that you say when I get to. Like,
it blows my mind that Gilman is still on there.
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
Well, so anyway, yeah, like, let's... Let me
write this down now. This week we talked about Regis and Philbin. Regis and Kathy Lee.
Like Regis and Philbin.
I agree with you that this is a movie about monsters, so there should be more monsters, but I also kind of like that it's a movie ostensibly about monsters. And so, like, I don't buy into the idea that we are the monsters, because that never really happens here. But I kind of like the idea that this movie is sort of a love letter to monsters. Like, we don't see them a lot, but we see evidence of them, like, in the pictures and in the it's everywhere. Like, this is a movie adorned by monsters, but not, like, really.
And we also even get that one of the great scenes is when Adam Green and the cameraman turn around to talk to the camera with the computer screen behind him.
And we see one and no one sees it.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was a great... As soon as they turned around, I was like, well, something's going to show up on the screen, because that was just a way too obvious of a turnaround. But yeah, there's like a cemetery... Like, he sit there for like a good 2 minutes while they talked before even coming, like, moving.
Yeah.
That was great.
I'd be so angry if I were the editor who'd been sitting through all those hours of footage, and then the one time something happens, I was distracted by those guys.
Oh, those
Maybe
guys.
Maybe I would just... They watched him just pause the footage. Yeah, so he would have seen it, but he didn't see it then.
Yeah, I dug it. Like,
I liked it too.
I don't know. Like, I would rank it pretty high. Like, as far as things that I enjoyed watching, I was never ever at it for a second bored with this movie. Like, every minute of it was entertaining to me.
One of the best 8 movies we've watched in 2015.
definitely one of the best 8.
No, I mean, I did like it. I think anyone who's enjoyed Green's previous movies, especially the Hatchet movies, because the tone is much more similar to that than to Frozen. Frozen's a much bleaker movie than any of the Hatchets are, obviously.
And this is, I'm just still blown away that this is such a popular film with a young female audience. I mean, considering he's directed these other things, Frozen, guys.
Yeah,
Frozen, like, apparently in my sense of humor.
It took a while. I mean, I thought you were still talking about digging at the marrow. I was having a hard time making the connections to that joke.
I'm sorry, Brian. I should have been there for you. I was not your Johnny on the spot with that joke. That's my fault.
It's okay.
I think that was the joke's fault.
Yeah, no, it was.
So
see,
harsh.
What I was doing, guys, was, like, there's a movie called Frozen.
I think if you said you shouldn't have gone with young girls because it's really been everyone, I think you should have gone with children's.
Okay. Yeah. That's probably fair.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised Disney hired him to make one of their animated features.
Yeah,
movie, and I don't think Jackson's even seen that movie.
I've seen it, and I did not like it.
Yeah, it's fine. I enjoyed it. It's so much more like an old-fashioned traditional Disney cartoon. I enjoyed it. Like, when it starts, you're like, how are modern kids going to like this? And then they did. So cool. And we're talking about Adam Green's Frozen now. I'm actually talking about
exactly.
What do you think of the actual ending? Like, what's your let's get to the what do you think? What's your take on the? I would say from where they. I like the escape sequence. I really dug that reminded me a lot, and in a very nice way, of the Blair Witch Project. The like once shit starts happening, I do like their escape. Sort of like. They try to drive around the thing, and then it steps. Oh, so I really like that moment.
Oh yeah, it steps in their way. I like that too. I think it should have ended with Ray Wise's "There are no
tearful apology."
Monsters. There's no such thing as monsters, and ended on that going black and then credits. I didn't like the coda was too. This
obvious.
Is what has to happen. We've got to have a Carrie moment.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah, I agree. I'm not. I could but also see like
the other thing is too is that he announces what he's about to show, then shows the footage. So whatever it was that scared him,
he's still alive.
Yeah, it didn't kill him, and it obviously didn't. I mean, he's
unless we're supposed to believe that that's the footage somehow that we're seeing that footage outside of what we've just seen.
Yeah,
that's the only thing I think of. We're supposed to think that somehow we're seeing it somehow else. But I agree with you. He tells us that, and so imagine that's the footage he got and was given. Yeah. And so there was nothing there when he woke up. He's just frightened and woken up, and the creature somehow with its heavy breathing and everything, ran away in time.
It's shambling madness.
Yeah.
I loved the gait of that monster, like the swaying from side to side. I really enjoyed that. Like, that was definitely a nice touch instead of the sort of straightforward Michael Myers skulking. It was kind of a sideways thing.
Was that, that little Bigfoot, do you think?
Ooh. No, I think it was probably that's a good idea. Jack Skellington.
Jack Skellington.
Yeah, that's like not that. A monster in the movie.
No, what? It is.
I was surprised you didn't pull out a Nightbreed monster for that.
It's Shunasassi.
There we go.
That's the only one I remember.
O'Shaughnessy?
Shona O'Shaughnessy.
That's my favorite album produced by Prince from the 80s. The O'Shaughnessy.
O'Shack Hennessy? All right.
I would highly recommend this. Like, yeah. Especially for like horror fans, it feels like a love letter to monster movies. I love this movie. I would say definitely watch it.
No, I'd say definitely watch it.
I've seen all three Hatchets and Frozen. And so I mean, I feel like I have an idea of what Adam Green's about at this point. And I think this is one of the things that shows off more than those films do. What level of talent is actually there too. I really liked some of the stuff that went on there, and I thought it was really, really coolly done.
Yeah. Totally.
I think this thing, Frozen's too bleak and the Hatchets are too tonally, well, just
all over the place.
Just too campy almost tonally. And this strikes a nice balance there. Like, it is campy. It does have some silliness. But I mean, it does have some of those moments that are serious, and it does have, you know, that I like that escape sequence that you're mentioning too. I think that is, if any moment has tension in the movie, it is that one.
It feels like the Lost Boys. Like, they feel almost like the Frog Brothers, where they're just like, they're into it, and so they're looking for this stuff. Like, that's what I kind of liked about it.
So what you're saying is we should watch Lost Boys 3.
Yes, I think we should watch the Lost Boys.
Have you watched 2?
Uh-uh. Maybe we should do 2.
Do I need to?
Maybe we should watch the first one for episode 100. We're still talking about that.
We could do that. I love that movie. Lost Boys is great.
So I think it'd be much more interesting to watch 2 and 3, considering how much we love
the first one,
to watch the second and third one and then try and talk about them in relation to the first one.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
I think if not for that episode, for some episode, I think that's always entertaining.
Sure, that sounds great.
A movie you really like or love, and watch its later sequels and be like,
I say for sure.
I can do that with Highlander all the time. Oh my gosh.
Well, guess what? We're gonna have. I got a surprise guest. It's Kiefer Sutherland, and he wants to do nothing but talk about Lost Boys.
Excellent. And Flatliners. We should watch.
Flatliners, right?
We should watch that new movie that comes out this Friday, and then do Flatliners. Effect. Yeah, we should do Lazarus Effect, and then compare it to Flatliners.
Is that basically Flatliners?
Yeah, except with a monster.
With Mark Duplass.
Oh.
Yeah. So, all right.
Yeah. Guys, thanks for listening. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And we'll talk to you next time on the Horrible Podcast.
Yeah.